on.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte. Whenever I'm on the internet, I listen to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Lies.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Lamentation.
That is good.
Not anyway.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
Hello.
Playful banner. All right, let's begin.
And welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show.
From the Linux Link Tech Show studio.
The Linux Link Tech Show studios here in beautiful Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Hot, cluttered, stinky.
No, it's not even hot this time, which is
atop
really,
high atop
cool.
Chateau d'An.
Yeah. One level atop Chateau d'An.
This is 98, this is right?
In the shadow 98. Of the star.
Yeah. Episode 98. This, the Linux Link Tech Show, is your source for Linux and technology and playful banter. I guess that's what they call it. Since 2003. So those of you who are catching up with us through this new phenomena
great minds
of podcasting.
Think alike.
We just want to let you know that we've been doing this longer than anybody else has been podcasting. We've been doing this since 2003, so you got a lot of episodes to catch up on, right?
And actually, the Playful Banner is also known as crap.
Crap.
Or shit. Or waste of time, according to...
It depends on who you talk to.
Some people write us and say, we love it, you know, just talk shit all night long. And some people write us and say, well, one person, anyway. Right, Justin
but
tells
think,
us all the time
down.
That, you know...
He liked the last show.
Deep down, he's a fan.
He liked the last show.
Obviously, he's a fan, because even if he calls and tells us that we need to stop talking shit, he listens to the show every day.
Yeah, because he's been complaining for like 30 or 40 shows, so you know he's got to be a... he's secretly a fan.
You know, speaking of shit, I'd like to give out a Vista Award. Our first Vista Award.
Vista Award.
Vista, you know, steaming pile of shit. Vista. Windows Vista's coming out. Vista Award.
As I'm like gagging my lungs
out. To Linux World Magazine. A few months ago, they sent around a whole bunch of emails. I don't know, maybe you got one, advertising a free subscription. You know, kind of like InfoWorld type free subscription.
Oh, really?
Where you go and you fill out the survey or something.
Because I got like
a they'll send you a free subscription.
2-year thing.
Of course, I filled it out because I like Linux World Magazine. Never received a copy.
Oh,
I'd like to know where my
bad
PR subscription went.
You know what? Since we are the voice,
they get a Vista Award. Yeah. Woo, woo, woo.
Since we are the voice of Linux and technology, those of you who do run Linux publications out there should be aware that if you would like good press, you really, really
like to
need to give us some free subscriptions for that kind of stuff. I'm not going to beat around the bush anymore. Send us free swag, or you're on a shit list. Just do it. You know?
We're easily bought.
Yep. You can buy us over, man. If you got a good Linux rag, send it over here. We'd love to read it.
I do like Linux World. I think it's a little pricey compared to the other ones.
Yeah.
And I really
and
don't
Linux
need
World,
that Java
like,
development yeah. DVD they always
For those
there.
Of you who... You're talking about the magazine, right?
Yes.
For those
not
of you
expo.
Who have not like checked the
they
magazine out yet,
a free expo.
It's a really
in
good, like
house.
Ann says, it's a good magazine. I really like it, too. It's very corporate,
it's,
right?
Yeah.
It's a businessy corporate kind of. But they do have good Linux articles in there, and I like checking out, you know, because they always have, like, the big business reviews on Linux in there to tell you how, you know, what new companies are adopting Linux in what manner and, you know, what percentage of desktops they've taken over and how their new server strategy works and stuff. That's pretty, you know, it's pretty interesting stuff. And it's sometimes it's good information to have that in the back of your head as you're, you know, promoting Linux use in your particular line of work or whatnot. However, the all-time best Linux magazine of all times best all times.
Would still have Maximum to be. Linux?
That was a great magazine. That pissed me off, is the Linux Journal. The best one really was Maximum Linux. Dan and I agree on that.
I did like that one when it was coming out, yeah.
Maximum Linux was a cool Linux magazine.
It was fun.
It was. It was a really great magazine. And, of course, they had to fold. And
the other ones I like, too. I do like the British ones. The UK magazines.
The Linux magazine UK. Yeah, and what was
Linux
the other one?
Format
Linux Format.
Linux Pro.
Yeah.
Right.
I like those, too, but...
The trouble is they're $15 a piece.
$15
a
magazine,
it's like a mortgage a month
man.
To get them.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
They are.
But they're actually written very well.
Ah, man, who's calling?
Ow.
I can't turn that off. And I can't get to it. I brought it up straight through a VNC session.
Ow.
It's happening.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey, Heine Meister, how you doing?
Heine Meister.
Heine Meister.
How's it going?
All right. You know that we are going to have to cut you off and do a conference call.
Okay.
About 9 o'clock, so.
No problem.
You're aware of that.
Are you going to call me back, or are you just blowing me off?
No, you can stay on now. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. It's Pat. How does that theme song go? It's Pat. You know,
it's Pat.
Saturday Night Live thing, and they're talking about the androgynous Pat.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to try a conference call right now.
Okay.
I'm going to get, because Jeremy's online, so I'm going to pop him on.
All right.
Okay.
And then I'll conference you right back.
Super.
All right, hold on.
Super, thanks. Super.
Oh, before I conference him right back, I did want to put out an honorable mention, a thank you to Carl Davis, who hooked me up with some really great free netware tools for creating user accounts, masks for user accounts creation in our home directories, after listening to the OGG file last week. That really, it turned hours of work into 10 minutes.
Time. Carl, you the man.
So, you know, thanks a lot, Carl, man. That was really great. I really, really, really appreciate it.
He really, no, like, Carl, he's got your name written on the bathroom wall in front of the John, man, and he's...
Right over the sink.
He really appreciates it. Really.
Oh, look at that. That is terrible user interface.
What?
I switched to do a conference call, and all of a sudden, all the names actually become, instead of the person's name, it becomes the name they're signed up under. So it's where I would see Patrick DeVilla before, I now see Hackmeister instead, which is confusing.
Okay.
That's terrible user interface.
Wow, that's just terrible, man.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
We're down.
We're back. We're going to see if Jeremy's going to actually be able to pick up.
He's ringing, right? You know what it says over there?
Yeah, that's what it says, ringing.
Ringing forever.
Ringing.
There we go.
Jeremy.
Hello.
Jeremy.
Yep.
How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Good. It's of course, Dan and Link and Pat and Alan. And Jeremy.
Howdy.
From Linux Questions.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Sure, anytime.
Did you finally migrate those bookmarks yet?
What's that?
I said, did you finally migrate those bookmarks yet?
I did.
Good.
The new site is up, and I think it's up to about 600 bookmarks already, so it's getting a little bit of traction.
You're using Rubrik for that, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Do you know who the author of Rubrik is?
His name is Ricardo. We passed quite a bit of stuff back up to him. I don't think he's integrated it yet, but...
Yeah, Ricardo lives about a mile and a half from me.
Yeah, he's a member of our local Linux user group.
Oh, it's our Ricardo.
Yeah, it's our Ricardo.
At least
Pat.
A new version of Rubrik in a while now.
I'll yell at him for that. Actually, he's on the other. He's on the chat, but on the lug chat right now.
Oh, okay.
We got to tell him to get his ass over here.
No, we should just jump on the other chat room and just start talking shit about him.
It's good software. I like it.
Good. I'll pass that on to him.
Yeah, it's worked out well for us.
All right. Wawa Run is here.
Oh, yes.
I'm missing the Slurpee Run. This is becoming a tradition. Every episode, Dan's wife goes out and gets Slurpee for everybody.
Well, tonight we actually have a really good topic, I think. And that is Linux and online music stores and DRM. So why don't we start kicking that talk off there? What initiated or instigated this for me was that my wife said to me that she would like to get a portable media player, MP3 player, whatever you want to call them these days. Wasn't sure whether she wanted to get an iPod. I don't like iPods, really. I don't like iPods. They're neat, but
the tone has changed.
I love mine, but the quality is that great.
He was like rubbing his leg with the iPod when he first got it, right?
Now I'm cracking it open with butter knives in restaurants to get it.
The worst thing about the iPod, it doesn't play OGG files.
Well, right, it doesn't play OGG files. And there's no iTunes for Linux, and you can't get it to run under Wine yet, the new version.
It does run under Crossover.
The new one does?
iTunes?
Yeah. The new iTunes?
Oh, I haven't tried it recently.
Not the new one. Not the new one with the podcast catcher.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, she uses Debian down there. And she listens at work. She has to use a Windows machine with Internet Explorer. And she really, she got into listening to Yahoo's music radio station that comes over through Yahoo, but it only works with Internet Explorer on Windows. And
that sucks.
Yeah, she'd like to use it here too, but she can't because it won't run under Linux. So she wanted to talk about getting an MP3 player, and we're looking at. And she wants to download music. Legally, right. She'd like to use iTunes or some service like that. So we're not looking at all the services that are available. If you go to mp3.com, it's a nice little repository where you can search for songs, and it'll show you what music services are selling the songs and in what format. Primarily, you have a choice between WMAs,
yep.
Or Apple's AAC, I think it's AAC.
FLAC files.
MP4 mm-hmm. from Apple, but it's all DRM, restricted music.
Right.
So what I did was I took some for a test drive. The first one was I went to Buy Music. Buy.com has a music service, and for somewhere between like 99 cents a song, maybe some are cheaper, you can download a song. Well, I figured I'd try it out. It was a WMA. Was the format. I thought maybe I could play it in M Player or something like that, or Video Land Client, whatever. I grabbed it. First off, I couldn't download it, number one. A lot of these services, another thing that they do is they have a software utility that you have to have.
They send it to you in an executable file, right?
Right. So Buy Music actually has a client that you can run, which will download the song. Apparently, you can download it through the browser, but it didn't work under Firefox on Linux, and I thought maybe it might work under Explorer, but I don't have Windows. So I fired up this client that they have using Wine, and it worked. It worked really well. It brought the file down. Unfortunately, I couldn't play it. I would try and open it up in MPlayer or anything.
Because it was a DRM file.
And Video Land Client wouldn't open it, so I transferred it over to the iRiver. And when I tried to play it on the iRiver, it was interesting because right there on the display, it said the name of the song, and it said DRM. Right underneath it, so it wouldn't play it. So I was like, okay, I got paid 99 cents. I can't do anything with this.
Right.
Yahoo's Music and Rhapsody. Of course, we talked about Yahoo. Rhapsody. Real has a service called Rhapsody, which allows you to download music. But as far as I can tell, there's a restricted number of media players that will work with it. And in addition to that, the software is Windows only also. So even though there's a Real player for Linux, You cannot use it to play Rhapsody stuff, apparently. Right. You can't.
Pretty useless.
Right. So it's a radio station, but it requires IE and will not run in Firefox. There's been requests on the Rhapsody forums for Linux support, but I don't see that coming in the near future. All right, so pretty much all those services are out.
Also Walmart. I had the occasion to... on some CDs in Walmart, right? If you buy it, yeah, I'm a Walmart hoe, and I go there and buy CDs. Anyway, if you go there, some CDs have this little sticker on it. Says it's a good for it's a little coupon, good for so many Walmart songs or something. So I figured, what the hell, I would come and try and download them. And indeed, you can download the songs that they give you free from Walmart's website. However, they either come in some kind of an executable file, maybe it's self-extracting or something like that for Windows, or if you download them individually, not as a set, you get them as DRM WMA files, which, of course, I can't play in any way, shape, or form either, so that kind of pisses me off. So, Don't try and get it from Walmart either. It doesn't work.
Let me talk about the final service that, aside from all of MP3, which we'll get to later, because that's a whole different animal. But iTunes. Now, iTunes right now, the latest version doesn't run under Linux, under Wine, or Crossover. I think an older version might. I don't know how you get the older version, whether it's available or not.
It says it runs in the forums, oddly.
Oh, it does?
The Crossover forums, it says Crossover 4.2 works with iTunes 4.9.
That must be a recent release of Crossover, because the last I looked, and this is going back about 2 or 3 weeks, I think it was that they didn't have support yet, or they were just about to release it. Well, if you use iTunes, now I don't know how it is on how it works through Crossover, but if you use iTunes, we went out and bought a song, for Warren Zevon's song, and I purchased it through iTunes, and I pulled it over onto my Linux box. First off, it's hard to get it out to begin with. You can get it out, and it's MP4 format, but it's DRM, right? There's DRM. You can't play it on a Linux box. So the first way I figured out, without using any extra plugins from iTunes, you can create a playlist in iTunes and then burn that playlist to a disk. So it creates an audio CD. Then you could rip the file off of there through Linux, which you think is kind of ridiculous. You put the DRM into the file, but you can convert it into an audio CD and rip it off whatever you want and share it. It totally blows past the DRM. But, you know, that's kind of wasteful. Because everything you want to do, you got to rip it to a CD. Maybe there's a plugin that, you know, can bypass that. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm just talking straight iTunes. The other method of doing this is when you download the file, because it is a DRM file, there is an application out there that will run under Linux called HIM. Unfortunately, HIM is...
What?
HIM. H-Y-M-N. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, HIM is no longer in development for Linux. HIM is a command line application.
That was written by... What was it, DVD John there, or whatever his name was?
Good question. I didn't look at that far.
I think that was, but I'm not sure. I could be wrong there.
But there is JHIM, a Java-based version under development that works only on OS X and Windows right now. I don't know.
Was that the one that was housed offshore in India somewhere, and Apple shut them down eventually?
I don't know, because the site's still up, and you can still get the software. And I pulled it in from an apt... from one of the repositories through Ubuntu, and I think it was not an Ubuntu repository, but one of the other ones that I either got Cinelera or Transcode from. I'll have to post those later. But anyway, HIM will remove the DRM from the file and export it into a regular MP4, MPEG-4 file, or any other format, I believe, that you have the capability of encoding
really?
To. Right, and it works great.
It removes from what kind of file? From
when you download a
DRM, what, WMA file or MP3 file or anything?
It's what you get from iTunes.
Oh, okay.
It's an AAC
iTunes,
file.
You get an MP4.
Yeah, which is AAC.
Right, AAC. But what you have to do is it's a couple of steps. You actually need to be able to connect.
I'm gonna have something to get my money back from Walmart,
to your
man.
Linux box. You need to get the actual ID. Because the DRM is tied to the ID of the iPod. And on the web, it's easy to do. You just need to export a key that's your iPod ID, which is the ID of the iPod you can get from a D message to grep the GUID of the iPod. And once you have that, you just run HIM, the name of the file that you want to convert, and the destination or files, and the destination directory, and a couple seconds, you're done. And you can play them then. I played them on XMMS. I played them on Video LAN Client, M-Player. All of them played. It was perfect. I still have not found a way to remove the DRM from a Windows Media Player file through Linux. But you can do that with HIM. Now, the legality of that, I mean, that's up in the air. Removing the DRM, is it legal? I don't know. Probably it is for fair use.
I would assume so.
If I'm using it privately, I'm not sharing it. I want to listen to the music, and they're making it difficult.
If you purchase a song and you want to use it privately in your own home, you ought to be able to listen to it on whatever the hell format you want, you know?
Absolutely.
But that's what they're all afraid of, because if they allow you to do that...
Well, the DRM out that you're going to give it out to everybody.
Well, that, and also by DRMing things, they make you buy more than one copy.
Yeah, well...
You want to listen to it in the car, well, you know, you have to download it to... Your car player first.
No. Right. They want you to be able to, still with the DRM media, they want you to be able to transfer that one copy from your, you know, from your computer to your media player that you can take in your car and listen to it, and then you can put it somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's but more. Like you said, like, it's more making you buy more things. It's the one. The subscription
some
service.
Bitches, that's what
you know,
you can
download, you know, 100,000 songs off of them,
yeah,
but as soon as you stop paying the $14.99 a month for the service, gee, you've lost all those songs.
Now, you have an iPod, Jeremy.
I do.
What are you doing? Are you just ripping CDs?
For the most part, yeah, and then I use GTK Pod.
Have you tried any online services? I mean, there are Linux-friendly services.
I downloaded a couple songs in iTunes, like you get like a free song a week. I've used that a while back. I haven't done it recently.
Now, you doing that through Crossover Office? iTunes?
Yeah, I did it through Crossover.
Okay.
And, I mean, you can actually load the songs onto your iPod. I have a pretty old version of Crossover. I think I have 3.4, I want to say. And you can actually connect your iPod in iTunes. You have to download the song and then copy it over. Other than that, it seems to work fine.
Now, are you able to play those songs in natively in Linux then? Or have they been...
I don't think I've actually ever tried. I'm trying to think. The songs that were free that I downloaded kind of sucked, so I don't think I ever even bothered trying to listen to them.
I find that problem with a lot of the songs anymore.
Those free songs you get, you don't have a choice as to the song, do you?
No, it's just Song of the Week.
Now, you know what? You do have a choice. You do have a choice through Amazon. You guys tried Amazon? Download any music from them?
No.
Buy music from them? Download it? And they do have free songs out, too. And some of them are actually pretty good.
We grabbed a free song from Amazon that one time. Remember that those children's songs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Does the Amazon one work in Linux?
Yes. When you download this stuff, every time I download something from Amazon, it's just a plain old MP3 file. So...
I've been using mp3tunes.com, and that's pretty cool. It's a lot of the artists that are on there are like, you know, non big name label guys, but there's some pretty good stuff on there. I downloaded this one album where it was like big band music for like from the 1930s, like 30 songs, and that was $8.88. And I also got this other band that was pretty good. It was kind of like a Nine Inch Nails type group, and they gave you the whole album for $8.88. Or individual songs for 88 cents. They're high bit rate MP3s, and they play fine. You get a virtual locker. Anything you buy stays within the virtual locker, and you can download it as many times as you want. So that's pretty cool. L Songs, you know, the Linspire application, that's a front end to mp3tunes.com. So if you go looking through there, you could find decent stuff. You know, there's all different, you know, styles of music and everything. But it's probably nobody you've ever heard of.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. I mean, I think it's great that there's, like, MP3 tunes. And we're going to be talking to John Buckman from Magnatunes soon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are services that are friendly and non-DRM and will work with Linux. But, you know, if you want the latest U2... Because I know Link's a big fan of you, too. Or, you know, Alice Cooper's new album just came out this week.
Bono, watch him burn!
You're not going to find those songs on those services. Like, you know, I, for one, would like to get some older songs that I used to have on CD. You know, that the CDs are ruined. I wouldn't mind grabbing those.
Some old Clash CDs that the dog has scratched up.
Yep, some Clash, some Blue Oyster Cult. But you're not going to find those. You're only going to find those on, like, iTunes or what is it? Napster's new service now, which requires a Windows client.
Well, I think the problem is the RIA and CARP aren't going to give a license to anyone who doesn't do something stupid with DRM.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know if we'll ever see a good service that has a huge catalog.
Well, there is one service that has a huge catalog.
Not in Russia, at least.
Yeah. I mean, but is there a way that can be done and be usable under Linux? I mean, really. Can it be
done? The RIA waking up would have to happen, which I can't foresee that happening anytime soon.
And Steve Jobs is a dick. He doesn't want Linux, so.
Well, you know, eventually this stuff is going to have to bite somebody in the ass. I mean, other than the consumer. You know what I mean?
And, you know, that's what stinks about this is we're trying to do this legally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, we don't want to go out and pirate. We don't want to go out and steal.
Sure.
We just want to be able to get the music that we want to get. But, you know, they put up all these roadblocks. So, yeah, you know, and I said to my wife, I said, we could do it like this and do it like this. And she's like, that's just a pain in the ass. Go out and buy the damn CD.
Well, that's the thing that I always thought was stupid about DRM is the people that want to pirate it, DRM's not going to stop them. But the people that want to pay legitimately, it will stop the buy.
Exactly.
Useful.
Sure. Yep.
Which is stupid. It hurts the client, you know, hurts the customer, and it hurts the company. So,
not only
pretty much
that,
the only one it doesn't hurt is RIAA.
Yeah, but not only that, like, but by doing what they're doing, the method that they're doing, and aren't they supporting monopoly, illegal monopoly? I mean, Microsoft has already got in trouble for monopolizing the computer industry in the United States, but. Like the recording industry of America is supporting them, you know, all the way because they have to have that stupid DRM stuff that only works on, you know, your Microsoft product or your Apple product.
I don't know how the law works. They're probably getting around being called a monopoly since there are multiple corporations joined to form the RIAA. So it's not technically one company, you know, being a dick. It's like three or four or whatever.
Yeah, but they still form just one giant asshole, you know?
I completely agree.
It is the scary thing about this, though, as you look towards the future, and we're going to have to call John Buckman in just a second, but as you look towards the future here, you see that a lot of DRM technology is coming down. Pat, you posted, was that you who posted about the high-definition
the monitors?
And,
yep.
You know, as you start looking at that new technology that's coming down the pike, high-definition monitors, high-definition DVDs, high-definition television, even though the broadcast flag was shot down, I mean, they could still incorporate that.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be law, but they could still incorporate that stuff.
Yep.
And kind of lock out, you know,
lock out your average consumer.
TV, yep. Or, you know, Linux. The average, what they could basically say is, like, if you want to play, you got to pay. And this is what you have to buy. You know, I can go out and buy the same equipment but run a different operating system. They won't let you do it. And it's kind of...
Yeah, I think the whole trusted computing platform idea has so much potential to be abused that I can't believe anyone, any consumer would back it or buy anything. But most consumers don't care, I think, is the crux of the problem.
Right. And that's you know, when we talk about Linux adoption
sheeple.
On the desk... Yeah. Linux adoption on the desktop.
Sheeple.
You know, people want to be able to watch online videos. They want to be able to, you know, download music legally or, you know, go to a service. Or they want to be able to, you know, eventually Netflix is going to be able to deliver the content over the Internet.
Right.
You rent a movie, comes right down.
Right.
You're not going
to
be able to do this stuff under Linux unless you have some serious hacks. And sure, I mean, people who want to do it, who are experienced, to be able to hack their box, to be able to... you know, get this, you know, breeze past the DRM and crack the codes and stuff, we'll be able to do it.
Yeah,
but
it's
not
just that. It's
the average consumer won't ever
even
do that.
If
right,
we,
that's what I'm talking
even
about.
Even if we can, in some manner, get around the freaking DRM to do this stuff, it's always like some really confugulated, complicated, multi-step process, you know, which makes it totally difficult for you know, your average like Linux user or some other, you know, any other number of operating systems. However, you know, the supported Apple and Microsoft stuff is just a one step, you know, one click and you're done thing. It's just not fair. It's like they're picking on, you know, they're picking on intelligent computer users on purpose or something. Isn't that right, Pat?
We're gonna talk to John.
Yeah, I don't know if I can conference. Can I conference him in?
I don't think so. I think you got to hang up.
I think you got to hang up on everybody and then conference him in.
All right, Jeremy, you want to stay on for John?
No, actually, I think I got to get going.
All right, well, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks for episode 100.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks
for
stopping by,
Jeremy.
On,
guys.
Actually, let me just add. I'll add one thing on you.
Go ahead.
I have to say that the dedication you guys have. I started LQ Radio like 10 months ago. And for you guys to do this every week, that's a lot to pull together. So,
some hard shit, isn't it?
For those of you out there that just listen, appreciate that. These guys really do work their ass off to get this thing done every week, and kudos, guys.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
Thanks a lot. You're doing a fantastic job, man, yourself.
Talk to you guys later.
Yeah. All right, thanks a lot, man.
Bye.
Bye, Jeremy. And just to remind everybody that, hey, you know, all of us guys over here at the Tech Show, we do indeed wear our Linux Questions t-shirts that we got from Jeremy.
So. Yes, and definitely support Linux Questions.
Good site.
Go check them out, man, and listen to that podcast. It's pretty
forum,
good.
The best forums, the best.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt, man.
Fantastic.
Monster, huge radio. Forums.
The Linux download site hit a million downloads the other day, too. That was our most recent milestone.
Wow.
So.
Dude.
Cool. Yeah. So if you want to download a distro, go over there.
Yeah.
ISO.linuxquestions.org.
Yes, ISO. Yep. Do you have that? What is that one? What is that?
You even carry the BSD stuff over there, too, don't you?
Anything that has a free legal ISO available will carry, if it's an open source operating system.
Yeah.
Password set home?
I'm not sure if that one's actually there, but if it's not there, we'll certainly add it. If anything you want to be there is missing, just click the suggest link, and we'll usually add it within a day or two.
How about the Intel-based OS 10 when you add in that?
I hear they're selling it on eBay already. People are getting in trouble for that.
You'll have a lot more downloads added to there. And you'll get a phone call.
Yep.
Probably
cease and desist.
A visit from the guys in the black suits, too. Yeah.
You'll probably get to meet Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
In court.
In court.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, thanks a lot, Jeremy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks,
guys. I appreciate
Bye.
It. I'm going to hang up on you too, Pat, so I can
put
you in with John.
I'll be
right back.
Bye-bye.
Yay. All right, time to quit.
And that concludes our show.
John, it's great. I'm looking forward to talking to John.
Yeah.
For those of you who get the AUG, you'll have a little more John.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. How about the end of the AUG file last week?
Dude, you got some of the filthiest, sickest crap I've ever heard in my life.
I don't remember.
I'm back.
How you doing, man? I don't remember what I put on there, but I didn't think it was that bad.
I have to actually still listen to it because I didn't hear it.
Hi, John.
Hey there.
All right, John Buckman from Magnitunes.
All right.
Are you the founder?
I am the founder. I am the one. Magnitunes, c'est moi.
Excellent. For our few listeners out there who don't know what Magnitunes is, why don't you give us a little overview?
Is that few listeners in general or just the few that don't know what Magnitune is?
It's a good question. No, no. Actually, we got a pretty large listener base.
Awesome.
About 25 people right now. No, we do pretty well.
25 people and we make them listen, damn it. Yeah. We strap them in chairs in a little square basement.
All right. Well, Magnitune is, an online music website. And the idea was to try and take the lessons of the open source world, the Linux world in particular, and see what could be applied to music. So instead of the closed music world, which is the record industry we have today, where musicians basically have their music stolen and you buy music that then has copyright protection on it and you aren't allowed to do anything with it, you're not allowed to rip it or anything. Instead, try to make a record company that has a clue and see what happens. And that's what Magnitune is. It's the first open music record label.
With a clue.
With a clue. We got on the clue train.
With a clue. That's an important thing.
And how you're
you're a record company who doesn't want to screw the artist, basically.
Well, I don't want to screw anybody. I mean, the slogan at Magnitune is, we are not evil. And the reason I say we're not evil is because today's record industry is evil both to the artist, but also to the buyer, right? I mean, we know artists, unless you're Britney, don't get paid. And we also know that the consumer, as far as the labels see you, they just see you as buying bubble gum. They have no interest in the art. They're just shoving this stuff down the channel, and they want you to buy it. And, you know, especially now online, they're trying to sell these very low bitrate sound files through iTunes and others for essentially the same price you can buy a CD for. And the question is, why? Why are they doing this? Why do they put DRM, which is copy protection, on music? Why do they give us lousy sounding music? Why do they take single tracks off most of the albums on iTunes? Many of the albums on iTunes, when you try and buy them, you can't buy the whole album. There's a song missing. Why are so many songs missing? It's just because generally the record companies have become very, very distant from what they first started out to be, which is a way to get great music to people. and that's not what they're about anymore.
Right, but right now they're like they're focused on being greedy sons of bitches, right?
So they're very good at that.
So yeah, so that they can, you know, they want to filch as much money from the consumer as possible and not give any of it away to, you know, to the artist or anybody else. But that begs the question as to how do you make it work?
Well, you know, only the music industry do they think that 90% gross margins are normal. Only in the music industry would you come to someone like Magnetune and say, oh, my God, you're only making a 50% margin. How on earth are you going to live? I mean, do you know, I mean, Dell would kill for anything above a 15% margin. And here I am floating in 50%. When you buy an album on Magnetune for $10, $5 goes to the artist. So I keep $5, $5 goes to the artist. And it's funny. People say, how could you possibly survive on this? And, you know, it's we've all been persuaded that the hordes of lawyers that support the music industry is a sane way to run a business.
So take a step back for a second. You are the distribution method for a number of artists. What do they have to come to you with? Do they have to already have an album?
So I get about 400 submissions a month, and what I need from them is a complete album of a sound quality that would rival something you buy in a store, right? And I get about 400 of those a month, either as uploads or CDs or emails, and we listen to those, and of those we pick about 8 to 15, so it's about 2% get accepted. And that's all I really need from the artist, and then if we accept the album, there's obviously a legal agreement that lets me go out there and sell it. It's non-exclusive, so I don't take the rights away from the artist. But generally, once they get their first paycheck, they're real interested in seeing how they can make this work.
That's awesome. That's a lot of music to listen to a month, though.
It is. And actually,
how big of a staff do you have to
pass.
Help you doing that kind of stuff?
I've got one poor soul who listens to everything that comes in. And wheedles about 80% of it out.
So what do you look for then? I mean, you have one person listening. How do you decide whether a song makes it or not into Magnetune?
Well, the guy who's first listening, his name is Joel. You know, his goal is basically to get all the crud just gone. So the stuff that was just recorded badly, they're singing out of tune, you know, it's just pathetic. And that's 4/5 of it right off the bat. And then we're down to about 50 albums. What's that?
he's referencing an old
group. It's a long story, yeah.
That he doesn't like that I do.
This guy sent us some music one time to play on our show. This is the most horrid stuff I've ever heard in my life.
I think it's interesting.
Well, I mean, the thing about the internet is it's taught us, first of all, that there's an amazing amount of good stuff out there. But it's also taught us that it's drowning in an immense sea of crud. So that the sea of crud is you know, threatening to make us think that there's no good music or websites or blogs out there. But it's just not true. It's just you got to find it. And what I'm really looking for is, can I hum it? That's after I play. And it doesn't matter if it's death metal or classical or world or whatever it is. Afterwards, I want to be humming it. I want it to stick in my head. And if it doesn't, I found people just don't buy it. They're listening. We have shoutcast radio stations that are playing all our genres 24 hours a day. So you can tune into the metal station or even the piano station or the guitar station or the new age or the world station or the electronica station. And while you're coding or doing your website or whatever you're up to, we'll just play music for you. And if anything really strikes you, you can go out there and buy it as a download or a CD. One thing I'll mention also that's unusual about Magnetune is you can name your price. And what you do is when you hit buy, it says, how much do you want to pay for this album, from $5 to $18? Now, we recommend people pay $8, and what's funny is on average they pay about $8.20. So they pay a little bit more than we ask them to. And that's because half goes to the musician, and people feel good about that.
Hmm. That's really cool that you get in, because, you know, natural law would dictate that most people that did that would give you the $5, you know what I mean?
Well, the natural law would be if you want some music and you don't want to pay for it, you load up LimeWire and you steal it.
Right.
I mean, why would you even go to Magnetune if you wanted to pay anything? $5 is still $5.
Right.
So right away, someone who hits buy is already someone who's honest.
Right.
Otherwise, they just wouldn't be here. But also, you know, different people pay different amounts for the music, and what we'll find is stuff that is nice but not spectacular, people will pay less for, and stuff that's really unusual, they'll pay quite a bit more for. So it's kind of a measure also of how passionate you are about the music.
Now, have you had any artists that have sold on Magnatunes and then gone on to get like a record contract from a big label? And then
largely not. In fact, not at all. And I'll tell you why. Because I basically avoid people, musicians, who are looking to get the big deal. And the reason is that they're just delusional, and I don't want to work with musicians who are delusional. I mean, at this point, if you think the major label is going to come in and give you a whole lot of money, drugs, and babes, it's just not going to happen. What they're going to do is they're going to sign you, record you, and then let you hang out. Maybe they'll release the album, see how it goes. The average major label release, sells under 500 copies. The average is actually 330 records. So think about that for a second. Even though you're on a major label, doesn't guarantee that any of those CDs are going to show up in the store, they're going to promote you, or anything. In fact, the vast majority of the things that they sign, they don't release at all. They just won't want their competition to have them, or they want it just in case some new trend pops up. So generally, that's not what I'm looking for. Also, I'm doing what I call second-tier music genres. And what I mean by that is if you want to get some hip-hop or you want to get, some Christian rock or one of the major genres that you can just find everywhere. There's radio stations dedicated to it. There's stores have large sections. That's great. I'm not going to compete with that. There's no shortage of that music. What I'm really looking at is all the music that people love, everything from metal, electronic, new age, world. Those are genres that when you walk into a record store, you ask them, hey, where's the electronica section? They point you to about 20 CDs. And if you don't want the latest Prodigy, then that's too bad. And the reality is that something like electronica is a really rich, interesting music genre with about 50 subgenres inside it. And the record stores aren't selling any CDs in that genre because they're not engaging it, honestly. So that's what I'm trying to do with Magnatune, is take the genres that have big fan bases, but you can't find that music in stores, and the major markets aren't interested.
So you're actually now catering to what the music industry would consider a very small, unprofitable market for them.
Yeah, now have you read, or I don't know if your audience knows, The Long Tail, right? This is an article in Wired, and what they found in The Long Tail was that Amazon makes two-thirds of its money, or rather they only make one-third of their money from the top 40,000 titles. So that's really interesting. Let me just say that again. That means Amazon makes only one-third of its money from the top 40,000 titles. So two-thirds is basically all the stuff that supposedly no one wants. They also found that Netflix rents their entire catalog every month, everything on Netflix rents. And what it looks like is the mass market, the idea that 80% of your money will come from 20% of your catalog, is an artifact of moving boxes to little stores all over the planet. It's not an efficient way to do business.
It's because you're not giving people a choice, right?
That's right. You're not giving them a choice, and it's also just inefficient to have stores with lots and lots of stuff in it. It's much easier to give them, you know, a single shelf when they walk in with 10 albums, and they buy one of the 10. And we're seeing this all over the net because the internet allows very large catalogs, allows you to scale distribution and selection to essentially infinite lengths, that there's a lot more money to be made. In fact, the economics look like about two-thirds of the money is left on the table when you focus only on the mass market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone I know listens to some other genre besides a mass market genre, whether it's some classical or some jazz or some new age or it's death metal or whatever. No one listens to pop all the time, at least no one I'd want to meet. But that's just the truth. I remember meeting the Napster CEO some years back. At the time, what he told me is they were able to snoop on people's hard drives and see what they had. And he was expecting that people would have one or two genres and be top hit stuff. And what he found is when people can bootleg whatever they wanted, that they typically had 5 to 7 different genres, completely different, on their hard drive. And that's the reality. People are a whole lot more interesting than the major labels give them credit for.
So what you're doing then is you're providing an avenue for us to get the greatest music from the best bar bands in existence.
I mean, what I'm doing is essentially the same thing Red Hat does, right? Red Hat goes out and sort of nurtures the open source projects and then packages it and finds the best stuff all in one so that we can install our Red Hat Linux and not have to deal with all the open source projects that we could have contemplated but don't have the time to look at. So I'm finding the best stuff and packaging it up so that just get on with life.
Awesome. Awesome. I tell you, the first time that I remember reading anything about Magnitude, by the way, I want to give you a little plug as to, you know, as some people who turned me on to it, was an article that I read in a blog post from evilgeniuschronicles.org where he mentioned that this is right after...
Whose blog is that? What's so that? Our listeners know whose blog is that.
Well, I want them to look and check it out. Huh. It's evilgeniuschronicles.org. That's where you have to go. But anyway, this person mentions that... this is right after podcasting started, and he said that he contacted you and found out that the free download, free music downloads that you had were like podcast safe, quote unquote, and that he could play one or two of them during his podcast. And I thought that was such a cool thing that I had to go right over to your site and check it out, and I've been checking it out ever since. So,
mm-hmm. Well, in the Linux world, we've all got the GNU license, you know, sort of predominating and making everything possible. Without the GNU license, it just wouldn't work. In the music and media world, we've got something called the Creative Commons, which is essentially the GNU philosophy except applied to music. The legal code inside the GNU license doesn't work with music. Everything on Magnitude is Creative Commons licensed. So that means all the music on Magnitude is free, as in freedom, and free as in no cost, as in beer, to be remixed, to create new works. You can stick it in a movie. You can make a school project with it. You can do whatever you want. You can create new works with it and change format, whatever. That's, you know, unusual, let's say. And it creates very interesting opportunities like podcasting. I mean, I was just reading the other day how Rush Limbaugh said on the air, hey, we have our show, but we can't put on podcast because the record labels won't let us put anything that's copyrighted music in our podcast, and so, sorry. And, you know, obviously, if you use Creative Bastards. Commons music, it's not a problem. So that's pretty interesting, that suddenly podcasting is huge. The majors labels say no. And so anyone who does friendly music can get on. Now, what's really ironic about the whole podcasting thing is if you're following the lawsuits, which are just kind of fun, the Attorney General of New York has been suing the major labels, and they just confessed to what's called payola, which is to say paying radio stations to play their music. So think about that for a second. They're paying radio stations to play their music. And now podcasts come out, which are essentially radio stations on the internet, and they say, no, we won't let you play our music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just beggars belief. I mean, what are they thinking? In fact, they're not thinking, which is just wonderful. So they're going to go out there and pay radio stations to play their music, and I'm just going to stick a Creative Commons license on there, and podcasts will play my music for free. So that's what not being evil does for you.
Sure, it gets you really good advertising, too.
Yeah. And there's other interesting sites. I mean, if you go... God, I mean, there's so many. There's so many sites that if you just type Creative Commons and music in, you'll see all these interesting sort of side projects. Anyway, I mean, that's part of opening up your source, right? Other people can do good work with it.
So when can we expect to see the complete and unaltered Tech Show Index CD available on Magnitude. We'll even hum for you. If you want to make sure you can hum it afterwards, we'll hum a little. you know?
Real soon. You can buy me a beer.
No problem.
So now,
actually, the latest version of Anorak, which is like a Winamp-like media player for Linux, is going to ship with a whole podcast of Magnitude music. And what happened is the Anorak developers wanted to, first of all, when you install Anorak, have a bunch of music there to show you how to use it. But also, it happened that they got really into Magnitude, and they all end up picking their best, their favorite songs. So what we did is we made a podcast just kind of explaining what the developer's favorite song is, and then playing it, just built into Anorak. It's kind of awesome. Fun.
Is there any plans to then further incorporate Magnitude into Anorak so that you could actually purchase music? Kind of like a front-end, like
that.
iTunes?
One of the things I've done is the whole, all the metadata for Magnitude is all available as both the MySQL database, as an XML feed as well, and via RSS. We've had some people who've written some client-side GUIs, you know, like something that might plug into Anorak that would just surf the catalog and let you easily listen to it. I love that stuff. I mean, that's very cool. And so I guess what I would tell your listeners is, you know, check out the API section. You just go to info and hit API, and everything in Magnitude is API'd. They're all MP3 streams, so it's easy to plug in. All the metadata is there. Nothing easier than MySQL.
Awesome. So here's a good question for you. What's your favorite band on Magnitude?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Favorite
Which is
one,
the worst
man.
Question ever. Yeah, and I won't answer it. And the reason is I actually don't sign it until I've played it for a week, and I'm just completely nuts over it. In fact, my wife won't even get in the car with me anymore because all I ever do is play Magnitude. And she's just sick of it, but I am totally in love with these artists. So, you know, whoever I sign that week,
how about
that's
the current favorite or, you know, a couple? So
all right,
that you're not picking on
somebody
in particular.
Well, I got stuff that I haven't released yet. I mean, Solace is amazing. It's kind of Arabic techno kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a new album in front of me. I'm just flipping through the new CDs. I've got... Well, this isn't up yet. It's going to be up in a couple of days. So... But there's a woman named Laura Zucker, who's a great flutist. Aaron Starks does a cello piano thing, and his first album is one of our best sellers, and I've got his new album in front of me. DJ Marquitos is awesome. It's kind of clothing store techno, you know, boom, 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 fun stuff. What else do I got?
How did that go again?
You've heard it before. Burnshe Thornside is this real ironic kind of funk band from Sweden. And they got really clever lyrics. Pretty fun. I don't know. I could keep going on and on and on.
Awesome. So we have some stuff for all the millions of listeners who are now going to stampede your site. They have some people to go look for.
All right. Well, I will be sure to call and get more bandwidth right after the show.
Right.
I mean, the thing to keep in mind is when you go to the site, you can listen to entire albums for free, you know, as you decide what you might want to buy or not buy. So check it out.
So what it comes down to is off of this site, I can listen to the entire album for free. And, you know, essentially that boils down to if I wanted to, I can rip the entire album off of your site for free.
Sure.
But... You obviously turn a profit, and the artist makes a profit. So the whole concept of stealing the music and the what the RIAA is pushing down everybody's throat said, oh, electronic music is
If they have the avenue to steal it, they'll steal it. That's all bullshit,
it's
right?
Not true.
No, it is. I mean, the thing is some percentage is going to steal, but to call it stealing is really a stretch of the word steal, right? Because It's a stream there, and probably someone who's going to get a stream ripper is not going to be anyone who would even think about buying. So I think, in fact, they just saved me some money because they could be sitting there previewing the damn thing every day, eating up my bandwidth. Instead, they just stole the stream, burnt a CD, and they're not eating up my bandwidth anymore. And since they're not going to buy, then I'm not losing any money when they rip the stream. But more importantly, even if they were... you know, ostensibly stealing it, taking it, and they would buy it otherwise if I had DRM wrappers all over it. I don't think it's a good idea to punish all the honest people when you have a small number of dishonest people. I mean, every store has to deal with, gee, how much do we want to pat people down and security check them as they come in and out of the door? They all deal with a little bit of shoplifting in order for everyone who's honest to feel comfortable and have a nice experience. And I think that's a much saner approach.
So essentially what you're saying then is, well, what I say is it wasn't that they're wrong. They're exaggerating the amount of money that they're actually losing in the threat.
I mean, some 12-year-old kid who's ripping stuff off is just not buying anything like what they're ripping.
Right.
Right. They fill their iPod with 40 gigs of music. What is that, like $20,000 worth of CDs? And the kid's got, what, a $6 a week allowance? It's kind of funny.
Right.
You know, I pretty much as soon as you get a day job, you move on, you start buying music. But
so you really
also,
you think you're not losing that much money off of that kid's $6 a week allowance, right?
Not losing any money. I mean, the thing is actually, even Bill Gates, Mr. Greed himself, made a comment a few years back that piracy in China was a good thing because it would lock them all into Windows, and then eventually when they started having some money, they would have to start buying real copies. And the reality is when a 12-year-old kid rips some music for me that he's not going to buy, eventually he's going to remember Magnitude and he's going to come back. Or he's going to play it for friends who are honest. I mean, it's just going to get out there. So, you know, I just don't worry about it. If it got completely out of control and all my bandwidth were theft, maybe I'd start freaking out. But the ratio right now is about 35 listeners to one buyer. So 30 people come, one buys, which is an amazingly good ratio. I mean, no one on the web has that kind of what's called a conversion rate. So that tells me most people are honest.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's your philosophy, that's a damn good one in my opinion, and I'll go a step farther than your motto, which is that Magnatunes is not evil, and I'll tell you that I really think that Magnatunes is pretty damn cool.
It's very cool, man.
And
it's good.
I highly advocate people going over there to check your stuff out, because I've heard some really nice stuff there myself.
Excellent.
Now, John.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's wonderful is getting these CDs, and you just can't believe how good they are. There really are, and I have a huge CD collection, about 3,000 CDs. And the Magnitude stuff I signed is among my favorite in my entire collection, which is kind of weird.
Now, with the CDs that you sell, is that, again, is that on the part of the artist to put that CD together, the artwork and everything, or do you help out at all?
Basically, all I need from the artist is an ugly CDR that shows up at my door or some Waves uploaded. And then if they want to do the artwork, that's cool, but we'll take care of that. We'll do the artwork. The CD itself is made by a service that I contract with. So when someone orders the CD, it's silkscreened and printed and shipped off to them. So we don't keep inventory of any of the CDs, which is one of the things that helps, you know, keep us afloat.
That's nice. Now, John. Awesome. You're talking about Creative Commons and releasing the APIs to your site, and it's running. It's a MySQL database. Are you a Linux user?
Yeah, everything's running on Red Hat, and I'll confess to being a mega geek.
Okay. So you're okay. So now, Linux. As we look towards the future here, and there's always that goal of getting Linux more on the desktop for consumers and everything, and obviously you're doing a wonderful job with Magnitude and providing a little bit of what people like to do with computers, and that's listen to audio, to music, being able to download and purchase music online. But a lot of you know, people who aren't familiar with the with Magnitude or whatever, might be looking at, well, here's iTunes, here's, you know, Buy Music, but that doesn't work with Linux. Here's, you know, QuickTime media files don't really work out of the box with most Linux distributions. Other services coming down the pike, like high-definition DVDs and TV and locking in with DRM. What do you think of that future there for a Linux user? It seems like it's going to be a lot more difficult to do a lot of what we have to provide hackarounds for right now, and even almost be illegal for us to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would just flat out say, if you're a Linux user, you have no business buying closed music. You've already stepped over the threshold, and you've decided you're going to be an open-oriented person. And so you need to buy music that does not have copy protection on it, that allows some reasonable fair use provision as far as legal rights. And that usually means an MP3. When you buy on Magnatune, you can also get AUGs and FLAX and WAV files and even AAC files, if you're so inclined. I mean, it's interesting, because my wife, when we first got on iTunes, didn't have any problem with the iTunes AAC thing and thought I was just making a big fuss about this whole copy protection thing because she didn't see it. And then we got a new computer. And then suddenly every single song she wanted to play had to be authorized by hand. And she got really ticked off because she paid all this money, and it's suddenly, wait a minute, I'm down to three authorizations now. So each time I buy a computer, I'm going to lose an authorization. What if my hard drive crashes? And she started thinking, in a couple years, I'm probably going to lose this music completely, which is, in fact, what is going to happen. So, it's funny because there is iTunes, but, you know, for those of you who don't know, there's also mp3tunes.ru, which is an amazing Russian site that legally sells MP3s of almost all major label music. And through some weird loophole in the Russian version of the RIA, they pay their fees and they do this legally, and you get MP3s.
Legal in Russia.
It's legally worldwide. It's legal worldwide. In fact, there's a Czechoslovakian site that just popped up a few weeks ago that is now competing with them.
Well, the Germans outlawed it, not for nothing. The German Federation, like a month ago, outlawed it.
Okay. Well, I think it depends on where they're getting the music from. I know they were getting their music from Germany before, but nonetheless, you know, whether it's legal or not in a few months, I know the RIA is certainly putting pressure on to try and kill it because the albums are cheap and they're not DRM'd. But it's very, very compelling. And what's interesting is you show a sort of average user, here's some music, you just get a zip file of MP3s, or here's this weird format where you have to authorize, it only plays on iPod, nothing else. It may go away in a couple years. It's a no-brainer. Of course you're going to go with open standards.
But you actually have to show the people that, so to speak.
Yes. Yes.
And again, and
it's
one of the
slow going.
Yeah, one
because
of the
Apple has a good reputation of not being evil, despite a lot of evil behavior.
Despite being evil, yeah.
Wolf and sheep clothing. And I think
so.
Another thing with that is, and you brought up that is if we choose to be Linux users, we should be supporting open music, and I agree with that. But you know, on the flip side is there are artists out there that are in the popular media that I find enjoyable that I would like to get too, and it's a shame that they've locked those doors.
That's right.
They say essentially that, we don't want my business.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think, copyright law should absolutely be respected. And if some musician says, don't pirate me, don't buy me without DRM, fine. If you don't like DRM, don't buy it. Respect their wishes. It'll just be a competitive disadvantage. Now, it's annoying as a lover of music if there's something you want and you know the only way you can get it is to deal with the dark side. you just decide, if you want to do that. And most Linux users have some sort of commercial software or some sort of tittering around a little bit of non-pure side, and that's, decide how far you go. I mean, in my case, for example, while everything is running on Linux in the back end, I'm actually a Mac person on my desktop, and so I have a little bit of evil. You make those decisions, you get along in the world.
So now, do you have an iPod also?
Sure.
You have a lot of evil now.
Yeah, except it's only, I have no ACs. It's all VBRs. So I won't play that game.
How do you like the iPod?
How do I like the iPod?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Magnatune website, you'll see it's very simple oriented. It's just people, I think, want to do a minimum number of things, and on Magnatune at least, and it's generally listen to stuff and then buy, and the iPod is much the same way in design. It's just help me find some music and play it and get the hell out of the way. So I find it to be pretty good.
What generation do you have, or don't you know? Well, you should know.
I've got so many iPods floating around the house. So I've got first generation, big, fat, you know, the brick. And then I've got, lately I've been using the Shuffle quite a bit because it's so light you can just carry it in your pocket at all times. And by some strange miracle, they all play MP3s and waves, which is kind of nice.
Have your iPods been durable?
No. Okay. They're fairly disposable. But I usually think of technology as having a one-year shelf life anyway. It's only Unix and Linux that have this idea that things should last a decade.
I like this guy.
Yeah,
man.
Maybe I'm an idiot there, because I think that if you're going to shell out like $200-$300 for an iPod, it should last longer than 6 months.
Yeah, well.
But everybody knows you're an idiot.
I guess I'm mistaken then.
That's why, you know, it's called no user serviceable parts.
Yeah. Well, you can service those parts. You just need a butter knife and just
a knife and a hacksaw.
Putty knife.
Anything that's thin like that.
The cute little rounded iPod is virtually impossible to change batteries on. I tried it. It's not much fun. You really have to warp that thing. The big iPods, at least, you can twist around.
It's plastic. You can crack the case.
I don't know. I got a rotary tool that can help that a whole lot. You know?
I got a bandsaw right here. Yeah.
Hey, John. One of the people on the RSC mentioned one of the links on your site is not working.
Oh, great.
The best selling by genre stats.
Okay.
Now, how's that for customer feedback? Man?
Wonderful.
You're right.
I'll just blame MySQL.
And he just says, okay, like, you know, give me 5 minutes and I'll have it fixed.
That's the part of the site that's running under IIS.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No. It's purely LAMP. It's Linux, Apache, and some Perl, some Tickle, some PHP.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're not, John, if you're not on our IRC chat, they're all saying that Magnatunes rocks. So you got a good fan base going on.
I gotta
at least
tell
with
you,
our
what,
audience,
what kicked,
you know?
Yeah, what kicked Magnatune off was Slashdot. And nobody really buys music and is into this like the techie crowd. So that's great.
Now, did you code the site yourself?
Yeah, everything's me.
All right.
Awesome.
Graphics, code, everything.
Really? That's all you?
Well, I had an internet company for 11 years, so I got to learn how to program with that.
Wow. So you you did everything.
Awesome.
That's pretty great.
Hey, you know, I mean, anyone who's got a modicum of design sense and some basic programming, I can put a website together and just kind of learn as you go. It's one of the great things about the internet.
Yeah, but you don't get any, you know, very many recording company executives that, you know, want to jump on a tech show and tell you about how they programmed their website in MySQL, you know? It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I'm going to have to buy a suit or something. People keep calling me a recording company executive. It's kind of scaring me.
People keep calling us talk show hosts. It scares us, too.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, I think the reason Magnatune has succeeded is because I don't come from an industry background. Mm-hmm. I really have no idea what you're supposed to do when you're in the music business.
Which is, of course, why Magnatune works, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, music is like code. It's what's called intellectual property. It's something that people want, and you just look at it and say, well, how would they want it? Will they be able to find it? And what if they wanted to use it? What's fair use? Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I should also mention that half of the money that Magnatune makes is from music licensing. And that's uses like people setting up websites, it's advertising, and it's a lot of indie films. I mean, I got 2 indie films today. I do about 15 to 25 indie films a month using our music. And I think the Creative Commons license helps with that. A lot of indie films use the music while it's non-commercial. So they put the music in and they can show it to people, figure out how it works. And then when they get a license, it starts at $44. So it's really cheap to get started. And that's worked out pretty well. And that's kind of a software geek's way of looking at things, saying, I've got some code. how could I sell this?
Well, that's a really awesome thing to do, too, though, because, you know, much like, you know, indie music industry, the indie film industry is, you know, there's some really, really good stuff out there, too. And if you're providing them with some music that they can actually legally use to do their movies with, that's kind of cool, you know. It's
So 20% of a movie budget is typically set aside for music. So that's a huge amount of money. People don't realize just how much that is. And the permission sort of tangle, because every scene that's got music, the musician or the record label gets to sign off and look at the scene and decide whether their brand equity is increased or decreased by that scene being associated with their music. And they often say no. Even if they say yes, you still have to go through the damn process. And I really believe that to be a very bad thing for filmmakers. So one of the things I did with Magnatune is basically take away the musician's permission to say no, because I think that's detrimental to the creation of good things on the planet.
Sure.
I think permission culture is not a good thing. So some musicians want to retain all rights and the right to say no to everybody. But in the world of open source, you can't do that. Once you put your code out in open source, you can't say, well, if you're a Republican, I won't let you use this software.
Right.
You can't do that. The musicians, because they're often still in the control mentality, the record label mentality, they're thinking that. So part of the battle is convincing them that they'll make more money, they'll be happier people if they just let go a little bit and let other creative people run with their music and do cool things.
Sure, and even if you got great music and somebody puts it in a really horrible music or a really horrible movie, perhaps somebody along the line will watch that really horrible music and think, you know, the really horrible movie, and think the only thing good about that horrible movie was the great music, you know.
There's a total gore movie that just came out. That is
House of a Thousand Corpses. No,
just about. The subtitle is, she killed 200 women so she could bathe in their blood.
That's
pretty
bad. And
it's got a picture of a bathtub overflowing with blood.
This must be straight to DVD.
Dan's like looking through the DVD catalogs now going, where can I get that, man?
Dan will buy it.
I'll mention one other thing that's pretty interesting is a website called CC Mixter. So this is a Creative Commons remix site. It's run by a friend of mine who's also a musician on Magnatune named Victor Stone, who's a remixer and musician. And go to CC Mixter, you'll see lots and lots of Creative Commons licensed music, not just Magnatunes, lots of individual tracks, and people upload their remixes and also Creative Commons licenses.
So ccmixter.com,
cool.
What was that?
.org, sorry. And letter C, mixter.com. I think both .com and .org both work. What's interesting about it is it keeps track of the remixed tree. So as you take samples, it remembers who you sampled and keeps that in the website, and you can then follow the remix tree and see who remixed what. We just did a remix contest of one of my sort of female folk artists, Lisa did the Benedictus, and we got over 220 remixes, which is a huge number of remixes. When you go to major label stars, they'll typically get like 100 remixes for their contests. And I'm going through them now, and let me tell you, I'm having a hard time blowing it down to just 12 winners. It's kind of amazing, the quality of stuff that's out there. And it's all over the place. It's everything from industrial to wispy new age stuff.
Cool. You know, I'm going to get nitpicky for a second.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, here we go. If an artist wants to have a video on your site, do they provide you with the video? Do they make it?
Yeah, I don't pay for that, if that's what you're asking. But if
they
send me a DVD, then I'll rip it to a QuickTime file. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I know it.
He says quite out the order. Oh, man.
What's that?
Well, when are you going to start supporting Theora?
I really need to. The Theora boys are always linking to me because I've got Flack and Og support. So you're absolutely right. I should.
All right.
What I want to do actually is change the player, both for music and for video. Right now you just hit play, and it plays everything as M3U files, which are pointers to MP3s. And then the movies are QuickTime MOVs. What I want to do is change that so when you hit it, it does a little pop-up HTML page, which then lets you choose what format you want and then remember it. So I don't want people to have to choose the format every time they play. And then we could have OGG downloads, which a lot of people ask for as well, or OGG previewing, rather.
Right.
Less bandwidth.
That would be
better.
Cool. Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
How huge is your, like, is your server array? I mean, you got all of this stuff is available as, you know, you're talking multiple music formats.
It's 2 terabytes.
He's got two Pentium 300s.
Yeah,
over
two Pentium 300s, like we run the show with, right?
Windows 95.
There we go.
And they're all 80 gig IDE drives, just one after another. No. it's not that complicated. I actually used to, well, we are planning on moving to RAID, but every time I touch RAID, it always goes crazy on me. So right now, it's literally just 400 gig IDE drives mounted into a large computer and then just using symlinks to make it look like a virtual RAID system. And then you just dupe that. You just have more than one. But I had a conversation with the folks at the Internet Archive about large data storage. And every RAID vendor wants the Internet Archive to be using their stuff because it just would sound so cool. The Internet is archived by us.
Right.
But what they found is RAID just generally doesn't work reliably. And that's been my experience in 10 years. And it's not a Linux issue. It's even a hardware RAID. I've just lost so much data over the years. At one point, about 2 years ago or a year ago, we lost all of Magnatune. We had an 18-drive RAID array. In fact, we had two of them. And it was multiply redundant. It had, you know, the spare hard drive and RAID 5, so there was a hot swap and a spare, and the whole thing just blew. It's quite interesting that you can get that.
You've been doing backups, right?
Yeah. Unlike Dan, yeah.
No, of course not, because I've got this 18-drive RAID array. So, you know, we've got 6 backup drives in the thing, so... But somehow the thing destabilized, and boom, we had to re-rip everything, which was not fun when you have 400 CDs.
How long were you down for then?
About 2 or 3 days. I didn't really sleep much.
Wow. Nightmare.
Just feed CDs into every computer I own in order to re-rip it. Anyway. So that's the basic system. It is fairly decentralized. Like the shoutcast stations take 3 computers. You need an encoder, which converts things into a stream. That's the shout application. And then you have a broadcaster, and then you have another relay to handle that. And we typically have a couple thousand listeners on at a time that choose to do bandwidth, but people really like it. It's a good way to find music. And then it's Apache, and then there's a server called MathOpD, or MathOp, which is a high-performance, really stupid web server. One of the things I found, to my chagrin, is that Apache is great at almost everything except serving large files, like over 5 megs. It doesn't really do that well in the real world, and that's because people have slow connection to the other end, and their connections drop, and so you can run out of processes pretty easily. On Apache. So a dumb server to feed those things, and then everything else is run on PHP, which is, you don't mind if I geek out on you, do you?
No, go right ahead.
Absolutely.
What we're here for.
It'll
make our fan mail, our hate mail a little more positive.
So the server itself, everything's coded in PHP, all the pages are, but PHP, when I actually timed it, was about 3 pages a second, which was nowhere near fast enough to survive a slash dotting. And so what I did is I wrote a script that converts every night the PHP files, just does a fetch, into a plain HTML file.
Static HTML.
And then Apache. Yeah, into static HTML, and then you delete the PHP file so that Apache then sends that. And as you dance through Magnatune, you'll see there's no file extensions because then Apache just figures out, is the HTML file there? Yes. Okay, I'll use that. And then the only part that is still PHP is the dynamic stuff like buying and a few other things like that. That increased the per page rate to something like 280 pages per second, up from 3.
Of course, your templates are all open source, right? So I can check them out.
The templates, well, I think you source them. But I don't have it on SourceForge, if that's what you're asking. One of the problems with going completely open source is that you actually have to code somewhat cleanly. Otherwise, no one wants to look at your stuff.
Right. Yeah, I had that problem myself, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I have a bunch of projects that have shown up on either SourceForge or the Tickle Wiki and things like that. But if you start mixing languages, no one wants to look at your stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my stuff is a mix of Perl and Tickle, which is what I'm most recently enamored with, and PHP. So there you have it. There's the geek out.
That's awesome. I like it. I just got done with a 60,000 line PHP project today.
And that's one file.
No, it's not one file. It's 13 different projects.
And now he's going to run it and try and debug it.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's running and debugged. That's
I'll give you
happier
one
than hell,
other.
I'll tell you.
One other website trick that's that you can now do in Apache 2, which is if you've got a lot of small images on your website is actually not going to run very quickly. And the reason is that most browsers, when they go from page to page, even if it's all the same images, are going to check the timestamp on each image to see if it hasn't modified, the modified since flag. Right? And what happens then is as you go from page to page, even though all the graphics are shared, your browser is doing get requests, or rather head requests, on every image.
Right.
And if your images are small, that's about the size of an IP packet. So you're actually not saving anything by reusing the same graphic. The workaround, which if you use curl and get a graphic from Yahoo, you'll see, is to stick a cache declaration in the HTTP header that says cache -expires: and then put some date in the future. That tells the browser to not do any more head requests on that graphic. So what I do on Magnatune is all the graphics are fetched from a separate web server that returns always that this thing is cached until 2020. And then just the HTML part is returned from the main server. That's why as you go through Magnatune, you'll notice that all the graphics just snap. Just like Yahoo does, and most websites don't. So there is now a cache control directive in Apache 2's configuration file, so you can actually put that directly in it. Cool. You don't want to make all your pages do that, because then people are never going to see the new pages.
Yeah, because it's a nice never change.
Interesting. Thanks for that tip.
On my project, that I had to do exactly the opposite. I had to run no cache on it, so because everything's dynamically generated and... That would just
but the
be
graphics
a bad
probably
thing.
Aren't. No, but the graphics probably are not.
No, the graphics. That's the graphics just it. Are not. No.
Yeah. See, what you should do is run two Apache servers, right? Mm-hmm. Have no cache on your Apache server that's running all the PHP, and then on all your hrefs, all your image sources rather, where all your graphics are, have that fetched from your Apache server that's running cache the year 2020.
Cool.
And what will happen then is your Apache server will be really happy with you because all it'll have to do is PHP. It won't have to do any graphics. Mm-hmm. But also, people won't be fetching those graphics once they've already got them. They'll just be fetching plain HTML files. And so your site will snap on the screen just as if it had no graphics.
Nifty.
Cool trick.
Yeah, all right. You know what? We're going to actually have to close up because we're going to get kicked off of BinRev in a few minutes.
All right.
We don't want any of our listeners to miss anything exciting. anything else that you're going to tell us?
I think I'm all out of exciting things to say.
You know, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yes.
You're doing a fantastic service. And a fantastic job.
Yeah, it was
job.
Great having you. Hopefully you'll give us the option of grabbing a hold of you in the not-too-distant future for some more tech talk, you know?
And the other thing you should do is if you have any intro or outro music, you should just stick it on there. Just download it from Magnatune and put it on there. It's totally legal.
That's a good idea. We'll definitely be doing that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Great talking.
You have a good one. And
thanks.
Have a nice holiday.
Great. You too. Bye-bye.
So long.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Pat. Oh. Pat's still there.
Pat's still there.
Whoa, Patty.
Ba-da-da.
I'm still here.
Good interview, man.
You know what? One thing I want to pack in before we close up, there's the only option that we haven't talked about yet, which has been brought up a few times for using an online music service, is something like allofmp3.com. Now, all of MP3.com has generated an incredible amount of controversy. It is a Russian company. Basically, it is legal for them to sell, according to the their license of the Russian Multimedia Internet Society, that their media services does pay license fees for all the materials that they do distribute online. Now, the fine print on their site says that users are responsible for any usage and distribution of all materials received from all of MP3.com. It is the user's responsibility to check the local legislation of each legislation of each user's country of residence. All of MP3's administration does not keep up with the laws of different countries and is not responsible for the actions of non-Russian users. So basically, they say, not from Russia, you're responsible.
Yep.
Say, now, of course, other people have looked into this, and if I'm not a lawyer, none of us here are lawyers, but what it seems to boil down to is all of MP3 does have the rights to legally sell the files from their sites to Russian citizens, and any country does not prohibit the purchasing of said products. Thus, the purchasing of MP3s, AUGs, etc. is legal in the U.S. and United Kingdom, so you can theoretically purchase from all of MP3s legally. But then there is a copyright. No, wait, though. There is a subsection under copyright law in the U.S. that says importation law does not impact the importing of such a file for personal use. So some people might say it's illegal for you to import this file, but you can import it according to the law, copyright law, if it's for personal use.
Right.
So then it appears that all of MP3.com is legal for personal use, but be aware of becoming an innocent infringer. If all of MP3 is illegal because they violate your geographical area in accordance with their license, by purchasing from them, you are also purchasing illegal goods, in a sense. So it's a really, it's a gray area.
So what it amounts to is this. If you live in America, and
it may or may not be legal for you,
bastard recording industry can find a way to pinch your ass for some money,
they will.
It's gonna.
Absolutely.
They're gonna get you. If it's at all possible for them to squeeze you to get another quarter towards their European vacation, they're going
to
do it.
We have to cut off a bin.
So,
right?
What I say is to the
RIAA.
Good
night, everybody on Bin Rev.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Bin Rev.
Now, the last thing I want to add about all of MP3.com.
Yeah.
You know, let's put aside whether it's legal or not. The other question might come up is whether it's ethical. And that is, you know, it's up to the individual user. Now, I agree that songs purchased through all of MP... Well, songs purchased through all of MP3.com are going to cost you about 3 cents a piece.
Right.
Now, you know, we can debate back and forth whether 99 cents a song, which is iTunes, a standard price, is pretty steep or whether it's not. I mean, a good portion of that does go to the industry and not enough of it at all goes to the artist. But understand, if you think you're getting ripped off, you know, if the user is getting ripped off, you as a purchaser, and the artist is getting ripped off from the 99 cents, I guess the opposite, you know, you might not be getting ripped off by paying 3 cents a song from all of MP3, but understand, the artist is getting even less
right.
than that. So, yeah. You know, it'd be nice if there was a happy medium.
Well, I tell you, Judah is saying over here at emusic.com, he's saying they have a wide variety of musicians, even, you know, top-line musicians like Ray Charles and Tina Turner and stuff. Try it out and get 50 free VBR MP3s, he says.
That's for, like, what, $19.95
emusic.com. I think he said something like that earlier. It's like $20 a month, and you get so many songs or something like that. But it's not a bad deal, right?
Right. Now, again, I have brought this up in a past show, the use of all of MP3. I do think, ethically, it's kind of wrong. But I will say...
Because you're kind of getting stuff through a loophole sort of, kind
right.
of thing.
And, yeah. you know, the people who should be getting paid are not getting paid.
Right.
And the people who are taking advantage of the situation, talking mainly the RIAA, are still making money, albeit significantly less than when
well,
they do, but they're still getting a bigger chunk.
But see, the thing is, even
the
if...
artist does.
Even on the music services here, the DRM services here in the United States, that charge you, you know, $50 a song or 99 cents a song or something like that, do you really believe that the artist is actually getting, is actually seeing any money from that? From
I bet
that
you they're
sale?
Seeing a fraction.
It's a very small fraction.
What I'm saying
is I would be surprised if it was
a very
more than
small
a penny.
Right,
you know what I mean?
They're getting a very small fraction.
And that's...
But
And that's if they actually get the numbers from the RIAA. Who's to say the RIAA is being legit with them about it?
Well, I agree with you. I do think it's a very small fraction, but that fraction is probably even smaller if you're only paying 3 cents.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know,
yeah,
it
yeah,
stinks.
That's very true. But.
Oh, yeah, all of MP3.com. Where my personal belief in the ethics of that is if an album's out of print, and I said this before, like Blue Oyster Cult's Imaginos, I can't get that. No, the industry's not going to sell it to me. I can't. The only way I can get it is to possibly find it used.
Yeah,
and if I buy it used, the industry's not making any money off of that. The artist isn't making any money off of that. But if I buy it through all of MP3.com, you know, yeah, what is the difference? I can't get it legitimately anywhere but buying used, and you know, I'm not going to find it used because nobody's going to
sell
it.
There was a real good article about a year and a half ago or so on a there's an e-magazine called Salon, which is sort of like
Salon.
A leftist.
Salon.com.
Yeah.
Salon.
But they had a really interesting bunch of articles on how they broke down the music business and what artists actually get paid and everything on it. If you look up on that website, you can find it. It was done pretty good. I think it was done by Courtney Love, actually.
She actually has a mind, shockingly.
Every once in a while, yeah. When it's
she's got some brain cells left.
When she's not in rehab.
Only a couple brain cells, yeah, right.
So, Alan,
and she hides them so well. That's the thing.
We gotta actually close this up here.
We're not going to hear Alan's review?
No, we'll go right next week.
Review of what? I don't know.
It's Mac.
My crossover to the other side.
You're running Vista now, right?
Not really.
That's what it is.
Not ever.
Girls. All right. So what? We're gonna shut it down now. Hey, everybody! Thanks a lot for joining us again. On our 98th episode of the Linux Link Tech Show, right? We've been doing this for 3 years, since 2003. And hope to keep going. We're almost at 100. Make sure you listen for that one. That'll be a good one.
Playful Banner since 2003.
Playful Banner since 2003. And we hope to be doing this, the 200th episode, sometime along, you know. We can keep Dan awake.
Hold on a second, Pat. Don't leave. You can't hear that, can you, Pat?
I hear you.
Can you hear the music?
No, I don't hear the music.
I haven't figured out a way to patch that into him.
It's okay.
It's good anyway. Anyway, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Wait, Pat, don't leave.
I'm not going anywhere.
Head banging to Conan.
Conan!
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi. It's over.
Oh, this is.